Do you or someone you love wish you had a better job? Want to be happier on your current job? Don't even have a job? Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
You know, I really am getting dispirited to see how many employers in the corporate sector, in the small business sector, in the nonprofit sector, you hear the laugh in my voice because of the hypocrisy, how many of the jobs have been converted from paid work to volunteer gigs and internships? Nice way to skirt the minimum wage law. Equally sad for job seekers, too few of those no-pay, quote, opportunities get converted into paid work. Often it's use up the free labor until they quit and then find new freebies. And that's particularly likely in sexy fields like fashion and sports and entertainment and the environment. Now, there's no guarantees, but I'm devoting the first segment of the show to boosting your chances of converting one of those rapacious, no-pay internships or volunteer gigs into paid work. And I saved for this important topic my favorite guest or co-conspirator, whatever you want to call her on the show, Dr. Barbara Nemko. She hates when I lay out all her accolades. I'll simply say she's the multi-award-winning, nationally prominent superintendent of schools, and focusing heavily on vocational education as well as technology. So she knows a lot of stuff. Barbara, pleasure to have you on as usual.
Good morning. I'm glad you didn't talk about my accomplishments. Thank you.
Well, I didn't list all those. Okay. So first of all, and I'm going to lay out these ideas, and then, you know, one by one, then you either rip them apart, provide a reality check, agree, amplify, and just say go on, whatever. Okay? So the first thing, of course, is that one size does not fit all, just like at a restaurant. Some you want to avoid, some you want to visit regularly, like Filippi's that we want to visit in Napa. So you want to choose, if you've got to take a no-pay or a low-pay job, you at least have the right to be picky. So in the interview, instead of just getting bombarded with their questions, you really should intersperse what I call your vetting questions, like, what might a typical day look like? After all, licking envelopes from home is very different from, say, if your responsibility includes taking notes during an important employer's meeting. You learn a lot about the workplace by being in such meetings. Another great question you might ask in the interview process is, well, tell me about the training and the mentorship I'll be receiving. And the final one for now, and three is always the magic number, so one more. What percentage of interns and volunteers get a paid position within, say, 6 months? In some, the whole notion is you really have to make an assessment up front before you accept and say, I'm desperate, I got to get this internship, I got to get this, do this volunteer gig, maybe it'll open the doors. You have to ask yourself, is this likely to be a dead end or a career launcher? What are your thoughts, additions, subtractions, agreements, disagreements, about the idea of how I would suggest vetting a volunteer or internship opportunity?
I would also want to know who are the people within the organization that I will be working most directly with. Mm-hmm. Who will I be an intern for? Mm-hmm. Because there's a huge difference if you're an intern to somebody who is a decision maker, who is a policy maker, or if you're an intern to someone who is doing something a lot more mundane, where you're not going to get a whole lot of opportunity to learn things.
And how would you word it in a ways to not seem too accusatory? Because there is always this delicate balance between being assertive and so aggressive they think you're going to be high maintenance.
I would just ask a very simple question. Can you tell me who I might be working with?
Okay.
And what their position is.
Sounds great to me.
Very informative.
I like it.
The second thing is I would not necessarily be holding out hope that this internship is going to be a job in this exact place.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The internship provides so many things that you need to put on your resume and you need to have as part of your background.
The skill set.
So
yeah.
You want to be able to have the people that you're doing your internship with as references, cheerleaders, advocates for you, even if they don't expect that there's going to be a job for you in their particular organization.
I agree. We're two for two. Okay. Ready for me to go on to recommend another?
Uh-huh.
Okay. So, you know, they all say you never get a second chance to make a first impression. So from day one.
And that's true.
It is. I say it because it's a cliche, and I always am embarrassed to say cliches, but sometimes they're so important and contextual that I felt the need to say that in that, to say it, but do so in that tone. In any case, it is important that you brand yourself from day one. And yes, I'll start with more cliche. Yes, come in on time. Yes, come dressed for the job to which you aspire. That doesn't mean you come in a three-piece suit. But if your direct supervisor is wearing an open, you know, a collared shirt and pressed chinos rather than jeans, you know, with the tears at the knees, you know, dress like that boss, but not necessarily in a suit. And then, critically, you'll usually get at least one meeting with your boss on day one or right away. Here are some questions that I think are critical to ask up front. It's like getting the answers to the test in advance. But the test is your internship. Are there hard or soft skills that I should work on if I want to succeed here? What should I do? I love, this is my favorite question of all. And we ran this by a colleague. We had dinner last night with the president of Napa Valley College, and he made a point of saying the same thing. What can I do to make your life easier? Because in the end, that's what an intern is about, or a volunteer. If you can make that job, that boss's job, easier, that's going to make you seem more indispensable. And at minimum, as you said earlier, Barbara, make that person more likely to give you a good recommendation. Two more questions, and I'll get your reactions. So another good question to ask your boss on that first day: what should I know about this work group's culture that will help me fit in? And finally, what else can I do? This is the open-ended question. I really believe in asking these catch-all questions that give whoever you're talking with in any context a chance to say something that maybe he or she wouldn't have otherwise said. What else can I do to boost my chances of getting hired? Barbara, reactions?
Yes. The what can I do to make your life easier is not only a good question. The most important thing is to not become an extra thing for the boss to have to do. And a lot of people are wary of internships because now you have picked up another person that you have to supervise.
Right.
And the person who is coming to you every half hour and saying, okay, finish that, what do I do now, is going to make you crazy, and you will be desperate to get them out of your workplace. So you need to really reach an honest agreement, and you could even say that. I know it would be very annoying if I have to keep coming to you and asking, what can I do now? So are there some longer-term projects that I could work on that I'd really be on my own? And if I have a question, who could I ask besides you? I don't want to bother you.
Yes.
And I think that would make the person feel very comfortable about having you as an intern.
Of course, that you'll recall last night, Ron Kraft, that president, and I'm mentioning him being the president because this gives you, the president of Napa Valley College, because it gives you a sense of what a real leader that you might not otherwise get access to, dear listeners, really care about. He says, you know what I'd really love? Somebody who can, this is exactly what you just said, Barbara, somebody who comes in and says, you know, how can I make your life easier? And then he may mention some big need or ask the intern to say, spend a little time scouting around for a big unmet need and then take charge of it. Do it. You know, that's what I really need is a self-starter. Not somebody who's going to come to me with an idea, but somebody's going to come to me with an idea that's maybe that I'm involved in the day-to-day life of this organization, I have blinkers, I have a narrow worldview. You come in from the outside and you see X and then say, I'd like to commandeer X and do something, you know, and take charge of the project. And then, of course, he doesn't, you know, want this intern to go and just do it on his own, but only periodically come in for progress reports. How do you feel about that, Barbara? Because you too are a CEO of your organization, the Napa County Office of Education. How would you feel if an intern did that? Would that be too presumptuous?
No, I think I would like that. I guess what I would, if I have an intern, I would like the intern to sit in on some of the meetings that I'm having, not mm-hmm. obviously not confidential ones, but on some of the meetings,
right.
and sit in on, particularly on cabinet, and see what are the big projects that we're working on. And then talk to some of the other people, not just me, to see where they could fit in to take over part of this big project.
And of course, that's a huge win-win, because it's a win for the organization, and it's a win for their resume, and it's a win for their skill set. And because very often an employer will hire an intern not malevolently, having them lick envelopes, but they can't think of what they want the intern quite to do, so they give them some routine tasks that they know that the person can do autonomously. But if that intern then politely, tactfully, without being like a know-it-all, gently proposes taking charge of some cool initiative, I think many bosses are not all ogres. They're really not. And if you, without being too assertive, come and say, you know, I would enjoy commandeering this, the organization, as I said, would benefit. The employee, the intern, would have a rich internship. It would look great on the resume and give somebody and get great skills for that person to have on subsequent jobs, which, as you said, may not be at that workplace. Anything else you want to add before I get going on to the next?
Yes. I think one of the soft skills that is so critically important for success for the rest of your life is how to get along with the very wide diversity of people that you're going to come in contact with in any organization. We have developed a culture of I am offended by X, Y, Z, A, B, C, D. And when you're in a workplace environment, everybody is different. We all have quirks in our personality. And you may be working next to somebody who has a quirk that is somewhat annoying to you. You need to figure out a way to deal with it rather than going to the boss and saying, I can't stand so-and-so.
And
maybe
agree.
That's trying to time your breaks so that you're away when that person's there and their break is when you're there. And taking a different lunch hour so you're minimizing your time and just being sufficiently cordial and pleasant to get the job done but not initiating any conversations other than what the work requires. But we can't handpick all of our colleagues. That's just not possible in the workplace. And if you become a problem because you don't get along with somebody, that may backfire on you.
You know what I like about that answer? The standard traditional answer would be, you should communicate with each other and work out an agreement. But you know, in the real world, it's more like what you say. Some people are like oil and water. They don't mix. And what ends up happening is these attempts to change each other, because you're not shrinks with who are masters at it, end up often inflaming the relationship. So there is some time after a brief effort to try to, you know, to bridge the gap between you. It is often wise. The wisest thing in the real world of the office is to minimize interaction where possible, whether it's to request a transfer, or as you said, more informally. You know, see if you can take a different break time, different lunch times, not work with them on the project, or minimize the interaction as much as possible.
And there are flex schedules these days. Not everybody comes in at exactly the same time and goes home at exactly the same time.
So all right.
You can use that too. But really, I think today we have so empowered young people to think that this is the way I think it should be done, and anything else that you say offends me. That doesn't work well in a real live situation.
I think we really can't limit it to the young generation. It's easy for us who are over 50 to say the next generation this, the next generation that. But the reality is that the whole society has become more,
correct.
Whether you're 70 or you're 20, is more on a hair trigger and is more likely to take offense easily. And so we do have to be extremely, ever more careful I have seen that from so many of my clients that they have. Everybody is walking on tenterhooks. It started 20 or 30 years ago when certain people would carry around memo pads and take notes and document what was going on in somebody's workplace. But it's become, you know, that was when there was generally something that were really some horrible things. Now, these micro offenses are really, people are very, very sensitive. We can't treat our coworkers in general like family or like friends. The world has changed. People are on a hair trigger. And some of it is society. People under greater pressure. The middle class is under ever greater pressure. Even the conservative columnist for the New York Times acknowledged that the middle class and working class is getting hollowed out. And so everybody is on tenterhooks. And there's so much anger about Donald Trump, especially here in the Bay Area. I mean, it seems absurd in the abstract that people would be more sensitive in their day-to-day life in the workplace because of Donald Trump, but they are. In part, just it's an emotional thing, but partly is there's a lot of uncertainty about health care. And so all of those things make people very, very sensitive. So we have to be, and if we are in the sandwich generation, your 50s or your 60s, and you have aging parents, that's yet another, you've got stress from your aging parents, and you've got your stress for your adult kid who can't get a good job and is sitting at home doing minimal work, doing a McJob, and even the barista job getting at risk of getting automated by the automated baristas. So there's stress. Everybody is stressed. So it requires a combination of sympathy, or I don't know, I never quite remember the difference between sympathy and empathy, and avoiding the people for whom you really are oil and water. I want you to get the last word. Anything you want to say about that before we move on?
Yeah. If you can't get along with your coworkers, you're less likely to get hired any place, particularly in that place, and you're not going to get a great recommendation, and you're going to find the same thing probably anywhere you go. There will be people who behave in ways that offends you, and you just need to learn how to deal with it.
You're listening to Work with Marty.
Unless, of course, it's truly some kind of harassment.
Absolutely.
I'm not talking about
fair
that.
Enough.
I'm just talking about that we're all quirky.
Right. Fair enough. You're listening to Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco. We are talking about one of the great problems in today's work world, which is that so many jobs have been either created or converted from normal, good, paying, stable jobs, not just into paying gigs, but into volunteer, quote, opportunities or internships. And some of those, unfortunately, a study shows basically 10 to 20% get converted into jobs. And we're trying to talk about some really practical ways of maximizing your chances of converting that volunteer, unpaid, evade the minimum wage crap that the employers are pulling. And again, I don't mean it's all employers. It is for-profit companies and nonprofits that are doing this. And maybe nonprofits are even more egregious because they're the ones who are constantly talking about the importance of treating labor well, and yet they are the ones who are because they have the cause, they can say it's a higher calling. They're using so many volunteers and so many low and no pay interns. It's just it's sad. It is eroding the fabric of humankind in this society. I think I want to go out. I have more things I want to share about this issue of how to convert an internship or volunteer stint into a paying job. But I always like to make sure that you, my dear listeners, are a part of our conversation. So I'd like to invite you to call, especially if you are either looking for an internship or in an internship or a volunteer gig and would like to make it a permanent one, or you've had an experience where you did successfully try to successfully turn a volunteer or very low paid gig to an intern to a real job, or you failed at it. Failure lessons are very important, or you're an employer and you are one of those people who hires interns and or lots of volunteers, and you either want to offer a tip on how they some other idea on how to convert that into a paying work, or you want to justify the use of the volunteers and interns, even though it's skirting minimum wage. Those are all good reasons to call Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco. The phone number here at KALW, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And now, another point here. It is very important to be visible. There is a fine line between being a show-off and having the work that you're proud of being seen by those in power, especially if you're a volunteer and intern, because you are so vulnerable. It's so easy, as I said, 80 to 90% of people who are in those volunteer gigs or internships never get a job. So you've got to, if you're proud of a work product you've done or even an idea, bring it up for feedback at a meeting or in an email to some people who you're working for or working with. Also, you might ask permission to sit in on a meeting just simply to listen, or if you have a good comment or question in that meeting, that your good comment or question is then going to be heard by everybody, and thus you have an increased probability of getting hired. Before we have plenty of lines lighted up, Barbara, but I'd like you to comment first. Do you have anything to say about that one?
Nope.
All right, then let us just simply go to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty and Barbara. What is your question or comment? Hi, it's you.
Hello. I'm a student, so during the summertime I'm looking for like an internship, so I don't mind if it's unpaid because I'm still learning, but the bigger issue that I have is so many of these places are looking for people that already have so much experience, but if I'm only a student...
Yes, your radio, I think your radio is on. If you can turn your radio down, that way we won't hear the echo. Okay. So, right, what you want to, and this is just one, there's no magic answer. First of all, you are articulate, your question was wonderfully worded, and a very appropriate thing. I'm delighted that you called. Let's start with that. Second, I really do, because as somebody who is older, I so appreciate when somebody from the next generation is asking these thoughtful questions, and it really makes me feel good. So, having said that, what you want to, one approach, and I'm curious then what Barbara would say is, I would say something, I would write in a letter of application or whatever, and say something like, I suspect you're going to delete my application because I'm a kid. I'm 16 years old. I don't have any experience. But what I perhaps bring to the table that might be helpful is two things. Number one, I am a blank slate. I am so open to learning, and I can learn things your way. Two, sometimes a younger person's perspective is a fresh pair of eyes. And three, because I'm so eager and young and idealistic, I think you may find me useful to have at least one of my type around. If you were to write that kind of a thing in your application, some of the employers are going to say, nah, I want 2 years, 3 years of experience. But there's going to be somebody who's going to say, you know, what a wonderful person this is. I think I'd like to at least interview her. Barbara, would you like to add anything to that or disagree?
I would just put in a little bit more about myself, what I'm hoping to learn, what I'm hoping to do, and why you think that working in this workplace would help you.
Dear caller, first of all, what do you think? Is this a bunch of old farts giving advice that's just not relevant to a young person, or is there any relevance to what we just said, to your situation?
I think as people who would be the people hiring me, I think that was really helpful. So thank you so much for your suggestion.
Do you want to take a moment? You know, Barbara made a really good point. She says it'd be important for you to say something about yourself that might entice that employer to want you to be there. How would you go about, let's say it was an interview, and I said, tell me a little bit about what you do about yourself that would make me want to bring you on board here. What might you say?
I think I would talk about being a good student and the type of skills that I have to have at school, how that would apply to like learning at the job.
How about out? You know, so much of what we learn outside the classroom is as or more beneficial than what we learn in the classroom. What's something about you've done outside the classroom that might make me want to hire you if I were looking for an intern?
That's a good question. Yeah, those are things that I definitely have to keep in mind. I'd say that, I have a horse, so that's a lot of responsibility that I have to take care of, like making sure that, like, things that need to be paid, but also that the horse is healthy and being taken care of and all sorts of things like that.
That's a very good answer.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm going to reword it a little bit. So again, I'm always trying to help my people grow.
Uh-huh.
So here's how I'd word it. You know, when one might think of owning a horse as just this elite elite thing, and that you're just able to just go and ride horses and just sit on the saddle. No, it actually is an extremely responsible position, because you have to do a variety of things, everything from being an accountant to make sure the bills are paid, to being essentially a diagnostician. When do I go to the vet? When do I not? Is there an appropriate supply of the food? Am I making the wisest choice of where to stable? So I like to think that owning a horse, if it's taken responsibly, is something that might be of value to you in your workplace. Can you see how I've preempted the objection that it's this elitist activity, and I've then followed by talking about how it might actually be valuable in a typical workplace. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Thank you.
Well, I thank you very much for calling. I wish you the best. The fact that you called and you were so articulate really does bode well for your future, and I wish you all the best.
Oh, thank you.
Okay. Let's go right back to the phone. Barbara, you want to say anything or ask anything? You should go right back
Me
to the phone.
Me too. What you said.
Okay, let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco. It is your turn on the air. What is your question or comment for us?
Okay, hi. I'm so glad both the Dr. Nemcos are on today, because I'm really curious as to what each of you will say about this. I'm working as a contractor right now in a new subject matter field, and right now I feel like I have four managers. There are four people, all of whom are trying to tell me what to do. And I don't know how to balance all their opinions without offending them. They've all been very helpful to me, so I don't really want to offend them. So that's one point. And the other one is, when do I assert sort of my own opinion? I've been in the business for 20 years, but not in this subject field, and it's getting really difficult to sort of manage everyone. They'll say, well, I ignore what he said or ignore what she said. Mm-hmm. And I just wondered what you guys thought about that and what I should do.
Would it help, Barbara? I want Barbara to go first, but would it help telling us what that new subject matter field is, so she has a concrete context?
Well, yes, I'm a technical writer, and I've mostly done computer, but this is a medical device company with a great opportunity, and I just love it. I'm very happy that I got that.
Great. Barbara, why don't you go first?
Okay. Is there a difference in the power positions among the four people?
Yes, there's one sort of main manager. He's the actual manager. And then there are other people who are more senior writers. And then there's a person they call information architect, who's trying to move the whole content into a new, very modern kind of thing. And I was told by the manager to pay attention more to him, but the other people are giving big pushback.
Then I would go to the person in the power position, and I would say, I am really excited about what I'm doing. I love this job. But I'm having a little bit of difficulty because I'm trying to do as you suggested and pay more attention to X, but P and Q are giving me a lot of pushback on that. Do you have any suggestions for how I navigate getting these competing opinions from four people?
I want to take my shot at amplifying on that. I think, you know, if you're going to be, if you use that, if there's a sense that you're blaming the others, those other people could sabotage you. Why is there a reason why you wouldn't say, I'm hearing some competing ideas for how to proceed, how to work? A, B, and C, and don't label them as coming from a different person. You're my boss. These are the three competing views. Which do you think I should follow, and why? Barbara or caller, what do you think about that?
I'll let Dr. Nemco go first.
Okay, Barbara.
I see your point. You don't want to be somebody who's being a tattletale, because that's not what you're trying to do. One possibility is to maybe sit down with the three of them together and say, I don't know how to navigate this, and let them work it out amongst themselves.
So, dear caller, we've given you a kind of a buffet of options. In light of that, in light of your personality, in light of those people, what do you think now is the wisest strategy for you to try?
I like the sitting down with the three people first. It kind of gives them a chance to, you know, to work that out. And then if it continues, then maybe going to the power broker, as you guys suggested, and saying, I've got the competing opinions or of what to do, without naming them necessarily,
right,
unless
mm-hmm.
he specifically asked, what should I do? And I think that's nice, because it gives them a chance, you know, to work it, and maybe even a chance to take the limelight off of me.
Good point.
And you know, they will then continue. Great. Thank you so much.
You're most welcome. Another great call. Thank you so much for calling. We really appreciate it.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Okay. I'm going to give out the phone number again. If you are involved in any capacity in terms of internships, volunteer gigs, whether you're looking for one, have one, or employ volunteers or internships, and either have a question for us or want to, you know, offer a tip. You know, I am a huge believer in crowdsourcing. You know, not all wisdom comes from the hosts. Wisdom can come from the crowd. And so that means you. So either your question for us or your input or your ideas regarding how to convert an internship or volunteer gig into decent paying work in a world in which ever fewer jobs are those stable middle class jobs that made up, and I'll use the past tense, made up the fabric of society, and are very important and are being frayed ever more, alas. The phone number here at Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco and KALW, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. I want to offer another tip and get your reaction to it, Barbara, about what an intern or volunteer might do to maximize their chances of getting paid work there, while fully acknowledging your point, Barbara, that that may well be not where they're going to get the work, but it certainly can't hurt to try. You're already an insider, might as well try to get the job. And that is to develop what I call a power schematic. Every work group and every organization has power distributed not necessarily by title. Sometimes an administrative assistant has outsized influence while some manager could be on the way out. So literally, chart the power distribution and have a tentative strategy for currying favor with the powerful. For example, one power player might be most impressed by a no-nonsense, get-it-done person. Other kind of powerful people might be all about the relationship. Still other power people might really value being praised a lot, or you're offering to help them beyond the call of duty. Like, you know, I have a little extra bandwidth. If you could use a helping hand on some project, I'd welcome the opportunity to work for you. What are your thoughts about the power schematic idea? Is it too manipulative, too structured, or you like it?
I would say it's hard to tell sometimes who are the most powerful people. It doesn't always show. As you say, it may not always appear in the org chart.
But that's your job in those first days or first weeks to try to suss out where the power really resides. Yes?
Well, I'm just trying to think of my organization.
Okay.
And we have so many different departments. We're not going to be able to create a job for an intern, no matter how wonderful the intern is, a paid job, because we can't do that, and because we're a million reasons flat-funded, and increase in all the obligatory costs per employee is getting so enormous that we're going to be shrinking probably rather than adding lots of people. But that having said that, with so many people in an organization, people come and go. So there will be openings. When it comes to hiring for those openings, it's always going to be the manager of that particular division. So that would be one thing to take a look at. Look at all the different departments and see who's the head there. But again, you may not come in contact with that person
right.
on a daily
basis. I'm going to interrupt you just briefly. So, you know, right, I'm not saying you have to know the
I'm
whole organization.
Done.
I know. I'm going to let you, but this is an intermediate comment. It's your own work group. You know, usually in your work group of five, let's say they put you in the accounting department as the intern. You know, there's going to be a manager, there's going to be some, you know, journeyman worker people, and there's going to be admins. So all that's reasonable to do is try to find out where the power distribution is in your work group. That's all I'm saying.
But I would try to get to know as many people in the organization as possible, because you could knock the socks off the accounting person and then the job opens up in community projects.
Okay.
And so the accounting person has nothing to do with community projects in terms of hiring. But if you have been friendly with, eaten lunch with, taken your breaks with, gotten to know a lot of people in the organization, and you have done obviously a good job where you are, then as a job comes up, somebody's going to say, well, what about Susie, the intern who was in accounting? She seemed really nice. And then if you're getting a good recommendation from the head of accounting, it's likely that that will
be passed on to the division that's doing the hiring.
Sounds good. I'll give out the phone number again, and then we'll go right to the phones. Phone number here, if you've got a, and I'll broaden it now. So either if you are just have a general work problem, anything, whether you're 16 or 76, or you're unemployed or well-employed but still unhappy, nonprofit or for-profit, the phone number for what we call a workover is 415-841-4134. And as well, if you have a question or comment related to the notion of internships, volunteer gigs, and converting them into paid work, that's also a good reason to call 415-841-4134. And now let's go back to the phones. Welcome to the show. It is your turn on the air. What's on your mind? Hello, it's you.
Hey, Marty.
Yes.
How are you?
I'm fine, and Barbara's fine as well, as far as I know.
Okay, great. Hey, I just wanted to give a quick shout-out to the Federal Reserve Bank of San Francisco.
Huh.
Every summer, they do two rounds of internships, mostly for college kids, but oftentimes they include people in their 50s as well.
Hmm.
And a lot of those people get really decent exposure to what the Fed's all about. And quite a large amount, like one-third, convert to full-time
wow.
jobs.
That's great.
No kidding. Wow,
yep.
That's a great tip.
You know what? I'm really glad about that, because that also reminds me that the federal government in general has very large internship programs that really are pipeline programs. So if you simply, my dear listeners, simply Google federal internships, you will see that there really are a lot of them. Fed is not the only one of the 10 zillion federal agencies that offer that, but that was a great reminder. I thank you so much
yep.
for the call.
Yep, thank you. You have been such a support for me. I actually have been an employee at the Fed for a year, didn't even think about it.
Huh.
Until I listened to one of your shows, so carry on. Kudos.
There's nothing you. That makes me feel better. Yeah, really, I'm so appreciative. Thank you so much for saying that.
All right.
Okay,
bye-bye.
You take care and be well. Okay, another tip on the converting an internship to a volunteer. This is the first do not. Everything I've said is do this. Here's a do not, and I'm sure you're not going to disagree, but maybe you have a story. You've got to avoid the gossip vine. Many people, and forgive the pun, many people who swing on the gossip vine get chopped down, especially interns and volunteers. There are so much minefield. There's so much that you don't know, especially if you're an intern or volunteer. You're a newbie. You don't know. You say one bad thing about one person, and you don't know, but there's so many ways that could come back to bite you. Barbie, amplification, agree, disagree, what?
Totally agree. The gossip vine is the one thing that can truly poison the culture of an office.
Yep.
And that's the last thing you want
yes.
to be associated with.
Oh, I have a client who works at a medium-sized for-profit, kind of a techie San Francisco South of Market firm. And it almost feels like just one big patent place. Everybody is offended by everything. All this gossip about who's sleeping with whom, and this one is doing these drugs, and she came in stoned, and she's doing this, and it's constant. And you know, first of all, that's a place I would make me sick. My client actually seems to thrive on it. She likes it. It's this little game. But I can't imagine if they were a public company, it would be the last company on earth that I would invest in stock. It just feels like they spend all this time on this gossip stuff. But I think even there, certainly as an intern and a volunteer, even though you normally want to fit into the workplace culture, I think it's really smart to avoid the gossip vine. One more of these, and then we're going to switch topics. It is, as you said right away at the top, Barbara, it's really right. It's unlikely that internship is going to end up being the place that's going to offer you the job. I cited the statistics, and you emphasized that point. So, and there really are no guarantors of getting good employment at that place you're an intern or volunteer. And even if you're brilliant and you're knowledgeable and you're likable and you're hardworking and you're low maintenance, there's a lot of luck, you know, and you know, whether you click with the person, whether there's really a job available, etc. So please, while you're in that internship, keep looking. That's the time to be looking and putting feelers out. And if you're fortunate enough, during your internship or volunteer gig, for another employer to show interest in you, it doesn't even have to be a locked-up job offer. Plant a seed among one, you know, you'll probably at some point have a trusted colleague and during at that place where you're working at the internship. Whisper, say, you know, I'm really kind of excited. This really good company is expressed interest. They've actually called me in for a second interview. That person might well leak that to others, and it is that leak that often is what makes the employer say, uh-oh, I'm afraid of losing this person. That person, you become perceived as of greater value, and you're more likely to get that an actual job offer if they're afraid of losing you. We all want to be, we're all seen as more valuable if others want us. Barbara, your thoughts there?
I totally agree.
Okay. All right. Well, I think that's a good place for us to end that topic. What I want to do now is I want to shift gears to something different. This topic of internships and volunteer things, while of course it can appeal to older people, is generally aimed at younger people, and that's part of why I was so delighted. You know, NPR and public radio in general doesn't get enough younger listeners, and hearing that 16-year-old call and so articulately just fed my soul. I loved it. But being fair to the full range of the age continuum of listeners, and disproportionately they are older who listen to public radio, I want to talk about remaining relevant as you get older. And so I thought I would do this in a kind of a fun way. I wrote a little short story, maybe 300 words, real short. And so I'd like to read it, hopefully read it without it sounding monotonic. And then, Barbara, I'd like you to have your reactions, and we'll talk about practical implications for remaining relevant as we get older. Nathan always loved technology, in part because it felt optimistic. Tech was always getting better. He loved technology also because he was not otherwise hip. He felt that using and talking about the latest gadget made him kind of nerdy cool. But by the time Nathan was 25, he felt a little like Lucy in that classic Lucy episode in which she couldn't wrap the chocolates fast enough to keep up with the conveyor belt. The apps kept coming. The smartphone features kept coming. The media management systems kept coming. He was fighting a losing battle against younger people perceiving him as irrelevant. In his 30s through his mid-60s, Nathan tried to stay relevant by becoming expert at his work as a counselor specializing in adult ADHD and anger issues. He incorporated his technology interest by staying up on the latest mental health apps. He continued to stay current, doing lots of professional reading, forming a client review panel, even being watched by master practitioners. But in his mid-60s, despite all that, Nathan found his practice shrinking, and by age 70, it had dwindled to just a few clients a week. Ironically, he felt he was still at the top of his game, but he feared that ageism was forcing him into retirement. Nathan tried upping his marketing, calling past clients to, quote, see how they were doing. He gave talks to adult ADHD groups, and he networked with lawyers who represent domestic violence perpetrators. But that merely slowed his practice's decline. And at age 72, grateful for his continued good health physically and mentally, Nathan found himself with too much time on his hands. So, in an attempt to fill his days and to stay relevant, he applied to PhD programs at age 72. He was rejected by all the accredited ones, but was accepted by an unaccredited one. And that program turned out to be perfect for Nathan. There were only two faculty in his department and few students, so they gave him an enormously personalized education. He wrote his dissertation on angry people with ADHD late in life, and as he turned 78, he completed his PhD. Nathan converted his dissertation into a journal article read by ADHD counselors, and the article got reprinted in a magazine for family lawyers. Most counselors and lawyers didn't feel comfortable working with angry 70-plus-year-old people with ADHD, so they referred such clients to Nathan. And thus, Nathan and his practice re-blossomed. He even figured out how to incorporate his interest in technology into his work. He directed the development of an app for older, angry people. Nathan was now more relevant at age 78 than he had ever been. He had even become a bit cool. So, dear listeners, first of all, before I get Barbara's reaction, do you need to do more to stay relevant? This was obviously a fiction story, but I tried to embed as a number of ideas that are maybe, as they say, out of the box for staying relevant. Do you need to do more to stay relevant? And if so, do you need to know what to do? Do you know what you need to do? And if not, do you know whom you should ask for these ideas? And Barbara and I are those people. You could call right now if you are worried about remaining relevant and looking for a fresh idea for being that. The phone number here, Work with Marty Nemko and Barbara Nemko, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And now, Barbara, what are your reactions to that short story? Short story.
I think the likelihood of somebody taking such a long-term deep dive into going back to school and getting a PhD in an area are not very practical for most people. However, having just come home from the International Society for Technology and Education Conference, I saw so many older people who are part of it. And what they do is you don't have to be an expert in everything. In fact, nobody can be an expert in everything. As your story said earlier, in technology, you can never rest on your laurels because it's changing so fast that whatever you know today could be completely outdated next week. But if you stay up on a couple of new things, that gives you enough visibility and validation that you are someone who is worth knowing. And if you present at these kinds of conferences, so put in your applications to go and do a presentation, then you have the people who come to hear you, all of whom think that you're pretty clever and may lead to clients and other things. So you need to get out there and you need to constantly be picking up a few new things, just enough to make you look cool enough that people will not look at you and think that you're irrelevant.
I completely, absolutely agree. And again, I stress that short story was an attempt to embed as many of these ideas as possible, including, you know, really out of the box ones like getting a PhD in your 70s. But you're absolutely right, and I couldn't agree more. Keeping this, you don't need to know everything. It is picking something, and maybe something that is cool, like a technology, or maybe public speaking if you're not good, especially if you want to give a talk at a conference. Go join Toastmasters. You know, get a tutor.
That's great advice.
Right. Get a tutor to help you with your public speaking and give you feedback. Give your own feedback. Record yourself on your phone and give yourself feedback. Say, am I boring? Would I bore people? Am I concise? You know, write your notes on an index card and practice giving a talk with just an index card in front of you so you don't sound scripted. All those things will keep you young, keep you relevant. And it's simply a fun way to live life rather than just going gently into the good night. So anyway, I'll give out the phone number again. If now it's time for workover. So if you have a work-related problem of any sort, it could be because you're unemployed and looking for a job, you're well-employed but have problems either your own job or doing your own job, or you hate a coworker or your boss, you have an ethical issue, or a self-employment idea. I like to play Shark Tank here. If you have a business idea either that is nascent or is one that is extant but is not doing well, and you would like some honest reaction and practical suggestions for what to do with that business idea, scrap it, alter it, or magnify it, those are all good reasons to call Work with Marty Nemko and Barbara Nemko. The phone number, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And while we're waiting for the calls, I wrote one other short story that I wanted to get your take on, Barbara, and I'm going up the age continuum. First, we were talking with young people, talking about internships. Then we were talking about staying relevant, which is something that becomes relevant in people's 40s and 50s. And now I wrote a short story about retirement, and it's called The Retirement Party. And Barbara, I'm, of course, eager to get your reactions to it. Charlie watched the clock, 4:58, 4:59, 5 o'clock. He had finished his last day of work forever. What went through his mind, I'll skip that. He's thinking this, it's just a retirement party and I'm out of here. Charlie entered the cafeteria to his co-workers' applause. Are they clapping because it's expected? In appreciation of me or in appreciation I'm leaving? At the dais, Charlie's seatmates made perky talk. So what you gonna do? Shouldn't I try to be honest and admit that the first few months will be easy? Clean up the apartment, read some books, take a trip. But then who the hell knows? He said all that, but decided to omit the who the hell knows. The MC began with the requisite joke. Age is an issue of mind over matter. If you don't mind, it doesn't matter. Jeez, when I first heard that when I was 20... That guy sure didn't make much effort to prepare. Then came the requisite exaltation. For 35 years now, Charlie's been a fair-minded banker, meeting the needs of borrowers while protecting our depositors' money. Big deal. Even if all our loan officers screwed up all the time, the taxpayer, the FDIC, would cover the bank's ass. After more puffery, the MC exclaimed, "Now it is my distinct pleasure to give you the man of the hour." Well, at least he deserves 1 hour. "The man with the last name like an eye chart, Charlie Szymanski." Smile some more, Charlie. You're trying to go out leaving a positive impression. You're supposed to be gracious, even though some of the members of the bank's community, the Springfield Bank family, weren't always so gracious. Smile, damn it. "I want to thank all of you for making Springfield Community Bank my second home." So I'm lying, but what good does it do to be honest at this point? Yeah, they can't fire me. But if I say something inappropriate, they'll think I'm going senile or something. Somehow my image here still matters to me more than being authentic. After Charlie's speech, more small talk, dessert. I can't wait to get out of here. I don't need to be the last one to leave. Maybe after three quarters do. And at the three quarters mark, Charlie pasted a smile, shook the hands of those he should, avoided everyone else, and strode, not trudged, out. I want him to think I'm still vital. Who knows, maybe they'll call me back to do some consulting or something. Charlie kept up the high-energy act as he left. Only when he closed his car door did he sigh and allow his shoulders to relax. So, I've passed one more stop on the conveyor belt. But I don't want to think of the next stop. Stop thinking about it. Think about your grandkids. I wish I were excited about seeing him more. Think about your ex-wife. I'm definitely not excited about seeing her more. Meet someone new? I still don't think I'm up for it. That's a good pun. Charlie put the CD of the Beatles' Help album into the car stereo and flipped to Yesterday. Yesterday. All my troubles seem so far away. Now it looks as though they're here to stay. Oh, I believe in yesterday. Suddenly, I'm not half the man I used to be. There's a shadow hanging over me. Oh, yesterday came suddenly. Why she had to go, I don't know. She wouldn't say. I said something wrong. Now I long for yesterday. Yesterday, love was such an easy game to play. Now I need a place to hide away. Oh, I believe in yesterday. And that's the end of that short story about retirement. Barbara, reactions?
That's depressing.
Not everything is supposed to be chipper and upbeat. It's we talked about upbeat, converting internships and volunteer jobs into jobs. We talked about staying relevant. So now a little bit of reality about the internal thinking of one person as he faced retirement and moving on the conveyor belt.
So
other
I
than it being depressing, what are you thinking?
I think the trick to retirement is that you think of it not as retiring from this, which is an end, and then feels like there's this yawning emptiness out there, but what are you going to retire to? And I think it takes a lot of planning. I think for most people, you have worked your whole life, and your days have been filled with work, planning for work, getting ready for work, coming home from work, resting from work. It's all about the work. And many times your whole identity is tied up. It's not that this is my job, it's this is who I am. So you can be left not only with a lot of time on your hands, but with an identity crisis at the same time. So you really need to think about retirement years before you're going to do it and start thinking about what are the things that interest you? What would you like to do? Who would you like to do it with? What are the possibilities of making it actually happen? So that when you retire, you know where you're going. You know what you want to do. And it's going to be a fun adventure. So start, I would suggest all of us, start taking notes. You run into somebody and they're retired and they tell you something that they've done and you think, oh my, that sounds like fun. I think I'd like to do that too. Okay, great. Let me write this down so that by the time you actually get to retirement, you have a whole list of people to contact, organizations to join, things that you are excited about, and you can look forward to suddenly being able to do all these things.
Nothing to add. I think this is just a great answer. It's terrific. We have just a couple minutes left, so what I want to do is, as listeners to the show know, I love Twitter because for a number of reasons, but one is it serves as a repository of my best ideas in which I'm forced to be concise. And I've, you know, I picked out the best of my tweets and I want to share a few of them and I want to get your reaction to each one.
So, I want to, before you do that, could I give some concrete examples of what I'm talking about?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, absolutely. Please do.
Since we're talking about retirement.
Love it. Go ahead.
So you run into people all the time. I ran into a woman the other day, and it was at the farmer's market, so it was a Saturday. And I said, so how are you liking retirement? And she said, oh, I'm doing a lot of fun things, and after this I'm going to the movies. I said, what are you going to see? She said, Wonder Woman. And I looked, there was no child in tow, and I said, Wonder Woman? Oh, yes, I take this film class, and we have people who come in who talk about the film, and they tell us what to look for, and they tell us about all the different important things, and it's supposed to be a wonderful movie, and I'm really excited about going to see it. So I said, that sounded good to me. I thought, oh, a film class, wouldn't that be fun? Oh, it's Tuesdays at 1 o'clock. Well, clearly, I'm not going to that film class. But I have started a list. So I said, okay, great. That would be a fun thing, a film class. We have a friend who teaches a current events class. It meets Friday mornings. I've obviously never been able to do that. That's on the list. A lot of people think about travel, but they have nobody to travel with. I had lunch with a friend. We're both still working, don't plan to retire for a long time. But she said, have you ever thought about Rhodes Scholars? Well, I thought R-H-O-D-E-S, as most people do. It's actually R-O-A-D-S. And it's a group that plans trips for typically older people, and they have experts about all the places that you're going who travel with you. They give you a list of books you might want to take a look at so that you're really not just looking at scenery and taking a picture, but you're knowing some in-depth stuff about it, and it makes the trip more exciting. And lots of people travel with Rhodes Scholars by themselves, so you wouldn't feel like you're this strange loner if you didn't have someone to travel with, because there'll be lots of people just like you. So take every opportunity as you hear about things and see things and other people tell you what they're doing to make your list. Okay, thank you. Now I'm done.
Fabulous.
Got it off my chest.
I love that it's really great. You know, you're on the phone, so I can't see you, but you know, it was great that you interrupt me. You had a better thing to add than the tweet. So thank you for doing that. Now we still have another minute or so I'm going to offer a tweet, and you tell me what you think of it. With the oversupply of job applicants, sadly, unless you're a star, it tends to be schmooze or lose. Your thoughts?
Say it again. I didn't quite process it.
Okay. With the oversupply of job applicants, sadly, unless you're a star, it tends to be schmooze or lose. In other words, you need to schmooze or you don't get a job.
Oh, I don't know. I don't think all jobs require superstars. I think all jobs require responsibility.
No, I don't mean that. I'm saying that, but average people do get jobs. But in general, it's only about you really have to be a schmoozer. Because if you've got average skills, especially if you're soft skills, you know, there's a million people who could do those jobs, and so the people who get them are people who have schmoozed. And that I lament that, but is that a fair characterization in your judgment?
You know, I can't say that would be true in my workplace. I don't think schmoozing is going to get anything.
Let me go to the next one. If your communication tends to be unclear, pretend you're talking to a bright 12-year-old. What do you think of that one?
Oh, I love that. I love that. I say that frequently to people. Excuse me, would you stop and in 25 words or less pretend I'm a smart sixth grader and tell me what that means?
Good. Okay, one more or maybe two more. No matter how brilliant you are, if your style is too intense, many people will dismiss you.
I think that's sadly true, and it's not that they mean to dismiss you. It's that if your style is too intense, it makes people want to back away.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like they become frightened that you're going to eat them up, overwhelm them.
Okay, one more. In managing, praise where you can, and when you can't, try invoking guilt. For example, I know you're better than this.
Well, I'm not so sure. I think of that as something in the workplace.
It can be in the workplace. Let's say
raising children.
No, but let's say
a really good thing.
So you wouldn't do it there. Okay. Well, I still have time for one quick one. When writing an employment ad, don't list all the skills required, only the difficult work that the employee will be doing.
Why would that be?
Well, because it bury when you have these long lists of a million things, you don't end up screening out the people who are not, you want somebody who's got the core difficult skills.
The only problem with that is that may lead, if you're only putting that, that's going to lead the person to think that this is perhaps a higher level, more powerful job than it really is.
All right.
Because you're not listing the day-to-day stuff they're going to also have to do.
As usual, we don't always agree, don't disagree, but I thank you, Barbara Nemco, very much for being my co-conspirator here as on Work with Marty Nemco. And I also want to thank my board operator, Joanne Marr, and, of course, all of you for listening and calling in. Please join me again next Sunday at 11. I will do workovers on callers, and I have been assembling a collection of my favorite new career tips. I'll share them as well. If you didn't have to work, would you? I wrote a little short story about that. We'll talk about that. Until next Sunday, this is Marty Nemco for Barbara Nemco, reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.